Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Breadbox Media, this is Setting the Record Straight. I'm Chuck Coughlin. I want to reflect for a little bit with you about one of the greatest composers in the history of music, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, and about his Catholicism, which steered his life. In classical music, their figures who stand out above all the rest, while there are seemingly countless composers who left indelible mark.
But there are few that are so great that they are in their own league.
Sui generis, one of a kind. One of these, paramount among these, is Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Now, it's hardly unusual that he was a Catholic, given the time and place where he lived. In what we call Christendom at its height, late 17, early 1800s. Who wasn't Catholic? Beethoven was Catholic. Haydn was a daily communicant. Later on, even Mahler converted to Catholicism, and the great Bach was a Lutheran, but other than those, so many of the great composers are Catholic, most of them. Bizet, Fauré, the vivacious Vivaldi, the Red Priest, he was red-headed, called him the Red Priest, because he was a red-headed priest. He was, of course, Verdi was sort of a fallen-away Catholic, and Puccini an imperfect one, but they were Catholics, if anything. Insensibility. But Mozart was deeply devoted to his religion. Now, there's much about Mozart that everyone knows, common knowledge, but a lot of it is misinformation. Popular portrayals such as the film Amadeus. It's a great film, but even if it depended on pseudo-history, questionable sources. So in that film Amadeus, we see a lot of exaggerations that for dramatic effect. Was actually quite unlike him. Peter Schaeffer, who wrote Amadeus originally as a play, was attempting to show a Mozart that his rival Salieri perceived. This was Salieri's vision of Mozart rather than the real man, a distortion. And one feature of this man, Mozart's personality and character, is almost always downplayed or whited out, eliminated altogether, and that is his deep, profound and ever-abiding Catholic faith. Born in 1756, he is baptized the next day as Johannes Christomus Wolfgangus Theophilus Mozart, where at St. Rupert's Cathedral in Salzburg. So later on, of course, he dropped Johannes Christomus.
That name was a custom when a child was born on the feast day of a saint. In this case, Mozart was born on the feast of St. John Chrysostom.
And the word Theophilus and his middle name Theophilus, he translated into Latin, Amadeus, meaning one who loves God, or the one who is loved by God. It means both. Wolfgang and his sister were raised in a devout and strictly observant Catholic household. Their parents, Leopold and Anna Maria, encouraged family devotions, prayers, fasting, regular attendance at Mass, frequent confession, the veneration of the saints. They're typical Catholics of the time. Leopold was pretty successful as a composer himself, and especially as a teacher of music. They had seven children, but all died in infancy except Anna Maria, Nannerl, and young Wolfgang. The parents were always concerned for the spiritual well-being of their children. Leopold once wrote to his wife and son on their way to Paris, quote, God must come first. From his hands we receive our temporal happiness, at the same time we must think of our eternal salvation. These words were written out of fear that Wolfgang had become, as he said, a little lax about confession, and Leopold saw it as his duty to impart to his children the truth of the Catholic faith, and to instill in them a personal piety. At first, Leopold took to teaching his daughter music
from an early age,
and she showed prodigious talents immediately. These paled in comparison to the gifts displayed by Mozart. His sister Nannerl recalled that by the age of 3, Mozart would sit at the keyboard, picking out consonant intervals, and by age 4 he could faultlessly play minuets and other pieces, beginning to compose by the age of 4 or 5. He began to experiment on the violin. Leopold wrote, God has endowed my children with such genius that, laying aside my duty as a father, my ambition urges me to sacrifice all else to their education. So the family started to tour Europe. It was profitable. They displayed their children as prodigies all over the continent. They played for kings, queens, emperors, popes, everyone who would listen. And these trips exposed Mozart to other musicians, other composers, and other styles. And he encountered a major influence when he heard the music of Johann Christian Bach, the son of the great Johann Sebastian Bach. Johann Christian Bach converted to Catholicism from his native Lutheranism of his father around the time that he met Mozart. He not only had significant influence on Mozart musically, but he served as a touchstone, along with Haydn, of course, of prominent composers who lived out their deep Catholic faith. Mozart's talents flourished, and at the age of 14, having mastered his art, he traveled to Italy, as many great musicians aspired to do. I'm going to repeat a story that you probably know, that while on this trip when he's 14, Mozart heard a performance of the Miserere by Allegri. He copied it down perfectly from memory, but manuscripts of this piece were not available. It was carefully guarded. It was considered in poor taste, even morally wrong, to copy the piece.
But young Mozart didn't get in trouble for this because it was such an amazing feat. He actually earned praise, and he was forgiven.
Then Mozart met Costanza Weber.
This young woman, she was about 18 when they married, was said to be quite beautiful
and clever. And, you know, very kind-hearted, modest.
And she turned out to be very careful with money, and she spent wisely. And that was important.
Because they married, and since Mozart was rather poor, it was important that she was rather economical. They got married at St. Stephen's Cathedral in Vienna. Costanza was 18, Mozart 26. Costanza gave birth to 4 sons and 2 daughters. All but 2 of the sons died. But they were poor. They were really poor. But their faith never wavered, and the flame in their marriage never flickered. Reading their letters to each other, one has the impression of a couple who fell in love with each other over and over again, never letting the many challenges and hardships in their life dampen their affection. But then Mozart died early, 1791. Well, yes, Mozart was a devout Catholic. He took Catholicism for his own, embracing it completely. It was a guiding influence throughout his life. Mozart's letters frequently reference his attendance at religious services and recites into the spiritual practices and beliefs of this great composer.
He wrote this:
I thank my God for graciously granting me the opportunity of learning that death is the key which unlocks the door to our true happiness. In another letter, Mozart expressed exasperation at the thought of those who are without faith, atheistic figures associated with the Enlightenment that was sweeping through Central and Western Europe at the time. About that he wrote, I have always had God before my eyes.
Friends who have no religion cannot long be my friends.
One of the letters to his father, he says this, God is ever before my eyes. I realize his omnipotence and I fear his anger. But I also recognize his love, his compassion, and his tenderness toward his creatures. He will never forsake his own. Thus all will be well, and I must be happy. It's hard to know how to compare composers. We don't have to. Like I have friends that say, who are your favorite composers, or who are your, tell us who your 10 favorite operatic tenors are. I said, I can't do that. I can tell you a collection of tenors that I do like, or composers that I do like, but I like them all so much, I can't put any as number two. They're individual. And you think about Mozart, Bach, Beethoven, these mountain peaks of achievement in music. Putting Mozart in that company immediately reveals that there's something more to his music that's individual. Pope Benedict, who was, when he was still Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, said this, Mozart's music is by no means just entertainment.
It contains the whole tragedy of human existence.
You probably are aware of the famous Requiem of Mozart that became his own Requiem, composing it at the time of his death, not quite finishing it. But he composed a Mass in C minor that is incredibly beautiful. A special favorite of mine and of many people is the little motet, short piece for a choir called Ave Verum Corpus, Hail True Body of Christ. For this, Mozart took a 14th century Eucharistic hymn, Hail True Body of Christ, written for the Feast of Corpus Christi. This is a piece that in many ways defies description, a departure from much of the grand writing with which Mozart is identified. It's tender, reserved. This little motet makes one feel the faith Mozart had.
In the Blessed Sacrament, in the Blessed Sacrament, in the real presence of Christ, in the body and blood of the Eucharist.
You know, there's an essay about Mozart's letters. Who knows? No one knows who wrote it. It's anonymous. I want to talk about his letters, and rather than do that only in my own words, we'll get to that later. I want to read a bit of this essay. It starts with this. If you read his letters, Mozart will be your friend for life. His kind face will show itself in moments of trouble. And when you are miserable, you will hear his merry, boyish laugh and blush to give way to dark moods as you think what he himself so courageously endured. Let us recall his memory. He was a pleasant and cheerful soul, had quick sympathies and the gentleness of a woman, or rather of a child, for he was given to tears and laughter, to teasing and all the tricks of a warm-hearted boy. Usually he was very lively and amused at nothing in particular. He had difficulty keeping still. Listen to that, he had difficulty keeping still. They'd give him a pill nowadays. And he was always singing and jumping around, nearly killing himself with laughter over anything funny, and even over things that were not funny. He loved good jokes and bad ones, and was without malice. He loved those he knew, his father, his wife, his friends. He loved them tenderly, and spoke of them with ardent affection. So that one's heart is warmed by this, as it is by his music. He had a splendid capacity for friendship. His letters are full of loving affection and mad gaiety, and he seems unaffected by the illness, cares, and terrible distress that would make up the most cruel portion of his life. His words come from an irresistible desire to laugh. His laughter is very near to tears, those happy tears that well up from a loving nature. He was very happy, though no life could have been harder than his. It was a perpetual fight against sickness and misery. Death put an end to it when he was 35 years old. So where could his happiness come from? I think you know. One source for his happiness was his religion, which was sound and free from all superstition. His Catholic religion. A strong, firm kind of faith, which doubt had never injured, though it may have touched it. It was also a calm and peaceful faith, without passion or mysticism. To his dying father he wrote, "I'm counting on good news, although I make a practice of always imagining the worst, as death is the true purpose of life. I have for many years made myself familiar with that best friend of man, and his face is now no longer any terror for me, but is, if anything, calm and consoling to look upon. I thank God for this blessing, and I never go to bed without thinking that perhaps on the morrow I will no longer be alive. Yet no one who knows me could say that I'm sad or discontented. I give thanks to my Creator for this happiness, and hope with all my heart that my fellow creatures may share it." So he found happiness in the thought of eternity, and his happiness on earth was in the love of those about him, and especially in his love for them. But you know, his true happiness was in creation itself. He liked to create. It never meant the bitter seeking after an elusive ideal, but a perfect joy and so natural that it seemed almost a physical enjoyment. Composing was as important for his health as eating, drinking, and sleeping. It was a need, a necessity. He said, "Composing is my one joy and passion." He seemed born to create. So easy was writing music, creating music to him, that at times it poured out from him in impetuous streams. You know, it brought back my memory of something when I came across this essay. Just came across it a few days ago. And the memory goes back 20 years when I was living in my beautiful house in Sanibel. It's long gone now, sadly. And I wrote a series of poems called Island Sleep. They're rather quiet, meditative poems. And one of them was about Mozart's letters, no kidding. And here it is. I'll finish with this, and I trust that you don't mind me offending you with a little of my own creation. It's called Letters from Home. Does the silver soul of Mozart know that we set his place at supper in evenings after reading his letters to us at the piano? Does he know that just before bed, our conversation still sarabands above his accompaniment? As the firelight dims, we hear the Countess and Susanna read their perfumed letter over our shoulder. In every pause, their words bud open. We breathe together as Mozart muses on, laying out a continuo for our heartbeats, beating an andante of stepping stones, each stone a beatitude along the path that is the way. You and I overlay our duet upon the lady's duet. We glide so alike that we pass into an infinity of mirrors and join pelicans soaring over the gulf at dusk. Many as perfect as one, a duet between oneself and all else. We bend our primary feathers down so that they're about to touch the surface of a sea of dreams. We tire of thinking and become thoughts. We are reveries of God. As Susanna and Rosina are Mozart's emanations, ephemeral vapors alloyed with God's granite. We orbit the water planet, intimate satellites, prolonging the moment before touching, grazing the sea like a lover. And so for this podcast, I wanted to do you something rather quiet before Thanksgiving next week. And reflecting upon the letters of Mozart and in the meaning of my poem, we read his letters to us at the piano. I mean, his music, his piano music, are his letters to us. There's something indescribable and ineffable that no other composer has woven into their music like Mozart has. It seems divine. It truly is touched by the divine. Let me read one last quote from a letter that Mozart wrote. It sort of summarizes the faith and music of this giant figure. Here's the way he put it. But if someone has been introduced from earliest childhood, as I have been, into the mystical sanctuary of our religion, if there, when you did not yet know how to cope with your dark but urgent feelings, you waited for worship with an utterly fervent heart, without really knowing what you wanted, and went away with a lighter and uplifted heart, without really knowing what you had. If you thought how lucky were those who received the Eucharist, and at the communion, the music spoke in quiet joy from the hearts of those kneeling there, Benedictus qui venit, then it is all quite different. Once you really take in again words which you have heard 1,000 times, in order to set them to music, it all comes back. It stands before you and moves your soul. Redbox Media. See you next time. This is Chuck Carlson.
Redbox Media programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.